HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 300, recorded live Tuesday, January 3rd, 2012. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Demis Bellot about Service Stack.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. It's the framework series continues. We're looking at folks that work on and write and include the community in their open source frameworks. And today we've got Demis Bellot talking to us about Service Stack. You can check it out at servicestack.net. How are you, sir?
Yeah, pretty good. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks for taking the time to talk to me today. So servicestack.net, it says on the site, open source .NET and Mono REST web services framework. Is that all it is? Is it just a REST and web services framework? Because it seems to have some useful things that I might want to use even if I'm not making a web service framework.
Basically, it is primarily around building high-performance web services, but it includes the entire stack because it's everything I'd ever want in order to build that. So it does have a lot of other bits that are just useful in general-purpose web programming. So it's I am including the entire stack, but it is all centered around how to build high-performance web services.
Mm-hmm. And then there's some subcomponents that are within Service Stack. Service Stack Text, which has text serializers for JSON and XML and data contracts. There's a Redis, which is a memory caching library. This is the C# open source Redis client to the Redis back-end services. There's also an ORM Lite, or what we call a micro ORM. And then there's a caching section, because like I was thinking there, each of those is useful just on its own. It sounds like you can download those separately as well.
Yeah, exactly. So each of those components are all basically useful in itself. Each of those components are actually downloadable separately in their own projects and dependencies. I actually have a MVC power pack where you can actually install Service Stack and you get all those dependencies in your MVC website. You don't even have to use a web framework, but you get access to all the high performance components. So there is the three different main components are is the text servicestack.txt has no dependencies. It's got a JSON and JSV serializer. It's there and CSV serializer. Mm-hmm. They're the fastest serializers of benchmark for .NET. Stack Overflow uses them because it's quite a lot quicker than what's bundled in MVC at the moment. Mm-hmm. It's basically clean. All the libraries actually work with clean POCOs. That's why I'm able to get a lot of reuse around it. And I think that would be actually really useful if anyone's dealing with have got their own clean models. You can actually use them with all the frameworks. With all the subcomponents, and then you got ORM Lite, which is a nice POCO ORM. You don't need anything else but the code first ORMs, and it generates a schema based on that.
Mm-hmm. So thinking about each of the different pieces separately, one of the things that I was impressed about when I visited servicestack.net was that you've got benchmarks. I thought it was really great that it's very open in the sense of like, here's what we do, here's what we offer, and click here for how our speed compares to the others. And in some cases, you're faster, and in other cases, you're not. And that's pretty cool. I'm looking at the serialization benchmarks for taking some Northwind database rows, and there's a couple of times where you're faster, and then there's another thing called ProtoBuf. What is ProtoBuf? Is that one of your competitors?
Protocol Buffers is a Google the Wire format that's it's very optimized for point-to-point communication. Mark Revelle wrote the Protocol Buffer implementation. It's very, very fast. It's binary, but it is it's probably the fastest binary serializer for .NET. It's closely behind that would be Message Pack, which is kind of a newcomer on the scene. But in all my benchmarks, I've seen Protocol Buffers basically be the fastest. And so it's basically Google's implementation of binary serializer. It ends up being very fast, very small, very efficient. And Mark Gravel from also at Stack Overflow, he wrote a very excellent implementation of it. So yeah, in terms of serializers, he'll have the best, the fastest serializer. But in terms of text serialization, that's what the JSON JSV serializers. I tend to prefer text serializations from a debuggability standpoint, and also from because they're schemaless, they're actually a lot easier to work with, and you can actually edit it in line, remove fields, add fields, and it all works really well. Mm-hmm. So it's actually they're all very resilient. But yeah, in terms of the text serializers, the ServStack serializers do very well. In terms of like they're the fastest text serializer for .NET. Yeah,
I was thinking. I was thinking about frameworks in the context of there's the existing .NET framework in the base class library, and then there's folks that write stuff that are kind of directly, I wouldn't say competing isn't the word, but they are re-implementations about what already exists. And is it usually or always speed in your sense when someone goes and writes something that already exists in the base class libraries?
No, not at all. My initial problems are code first solutions. They always, in all my experience, they always promote a more elegant, simpler solution. And basically, I've just been unhappy with the high level overweight abstractions. For instance, like ASP.NET Web Forms, I just thought was a false server side leaky abstraction, which didn't quite work for web programming. Mm-hmm. It works pretty well for Windows Forms developers, but I don't think it in the end promotes very usable code. WCF also has a server side very thick abstract abstractions as well on the server side, and I'd much prefer a cleaner, simpler interface where you can easily implement and easily test, taking clean models. Basically, it's as a pro a developer practicing solid design principles kind of thing, where it's light, thin, and basically fast. And I do prefer all my software components be very fast, since I do believe it's probably the primary feature of an enjoyable end-user experience. Yeah.
Why do you think that your stuff is faster than the Microsoft stuff?
Well, all the benchmarks show that. These actually aren't my benchmarks. These are the external benchmarks from different sites. I've got a couple of them that are mine, but basically the ORM, which shows in 3D frameworks like 12 times slower than Dapper and ORM Lite, is these are from Dapper's benchmarks. Then someone else did the serialization for the Burning Mug. Basically, every benchmark that we've seen, it's clearly a lot, many factor of times faster than Microsoft solutions. Microsoft do some good things, like the core for .NET framework itself is fantastic and is very good performing. So you get the core libraries like the concurrent dictionary and those, they're doing really well, but there is the high level frameworks that don't perform so well. WCF is not so great a performer. SOAP is terrible. The JavaScript serializers is like the worst performance serializers out there, I think.
And, why do you think that is?
I think they first. I think they didn't care too much about JSON because their XML data contract is actually quicker than their JSON, and there's got no reason for that to be. So I actually think they put a lot of effort in their XML data contract serializer, and the JavaScript serializer. It was a deprecated library that they've just resurrected and whacked in MVC, and I basically don't think they spent the time to rewrite a proper fast implementation. So it's because MVC on its has a lot of is pretty good in a lot of, overall, but there are definitely some weak spots that could be improved.
Mm-hmm. The reason I ask is I'm trying to get my head around where Microsoft falls down on library stuff, and I see lots of open source libraries that go and do faster versions of something. And then there's a benchmark that proves that, you know, it's X times faster, 4X, 10X, whatever.
Sure.
And then I wonder, because benchmarks only tell half the story. The other half, of course, is kind of compliance, how correctly stuff is. You know, it's easy to go and say, hey, I wrote this open source JSON serializer and I, you know, foreached over it a million times and it's better. But it's difficult when you start thinking about edge cases and encoding and, you know, character set encoding, regular encoding, correctness as well. And I wonder You know, is this something where Microsoft drops the ball on, where they are valuing correctness over speed, or are they just not very good?
I do think Microsoft has to encompass a lot more situations, edge cases than otherwise would. Although JSON.NET, for instance, is a very popular JSON serializer, it actually has a lot more features than the JavaScript serializer that Microsoft ships. Although the fact that it's a JavaScript serializer might say that it actually does more than just JSON. It's actually JavaScript aware. And I've noticed this where it encodes script tags for embedded in HTML automatically. So that's a nice addition that it does. But, I mean, it's multiple times slower, so it's doing something pretty wrong. Like, there's a lot of wasted CPU cycles. Mm-hmm. But I do think they do care about edge cases more than probably performance. But at the same time, I have a clear divide of the core platform team, the core.NET framework, which is very well performant, mm-hmm. and a lot of the high-level frameworks aren't that very well performant. And for instance, Entity Framework and that type of high-level frameworks, they were originally GUI-driven, and I feel like, and so is WCF, mm-hmm. the config is basically, it's almost a GUI-driven or config-driven solution first, and I basically, in all my experience, code first always produces a more elegant, simpler, more testable, and basically at the end of the day, easier and more maintainable solution. So I think the biggest problem is that they try to cater for the entry level programmers and have no framework specifically for pro developers, because the pro developers, most of them I speak to, don't actually care too much for the GUI designers or the config or the heavy config driven solutions. I think that's more of a what I like to call a drag and drop developer.
Okay. Do you think that we've heard the term alt.net, of course, and I don't know whether you are self-identify as alt.net or whether you think the concept of alt.net is still around and healthy or not, but maybe we just say alpha geeks or more advanced people. Do you think that alt.net or alpha geeks are people that love the CLR, respect the base class library, but the higher up the stack they go, the higher up the deliverable from Microsoft directly they go, the less they respect the stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. I think everyone still on the platform, because it's .NET's not actually the most vibrant open source platform, and I mean, that's where I spend my time, but it is, like, I think is technically superior in terms of my eyes. Well, on the server, I don't particularly like it for creating UIs, because I think dynamic is superior in that regard. Mm-hmm. But on the server, I do think it's just, it's kind of leagues above, like, the competitors, which probably would be Java and the JVM. And F-sharp, and they're just first-class, world-class technology. So I do think everyone has a massive respect for the core CLR team. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, most of the pro alpha geeks actually are writing their own frameworks. They're usually writing their own frameworks because there is a problem with the existing Microsoft prescribed solution. Mm-hmm. So all the technical friends in the alt.NET circle, although I think alt.NET is probably the wrong term because it was an existing community which I've never was a part of. But the pro .NET web teams basically are writing their own frameworks or maintaining their own libraries. Mm-hmm. They're usually on GitHub and you know, a lot of them are fairly mature libraries. I personally don't have as great a respect for the high level frameworks. For instance, I think there could be a lot of things that could have been done better. And faster and mm-hmm. cleaner.
So when a person sits down, when a listener maybe who's listening now sits down and say, I want to write a framework, should they think, I want to write a framework because I'm better than the other people who've written frameworks, or should they go and evaluate existing frameworks?
I think they should look at their requirements and see what their core requirements would be, and definitely check other frameworks at the time. Without a doubt, because it's something already written, well, already tested, is already mature, mm-hmm. is with a vibrant community, is going to be a lot better than something you write in your own time. But if you have differing requirements, it's actually takes more effort to understand and fudge someone else's API into your particular use case than it is just to create your own, which you'd know intimately. For instance, having and creating your own serializers, I actually am able to reduce, just knowing the implementation, I'm able to kind of bypass the type system in a way and actually produce a lot more cleaner, succinct code, because a lot of developers that didn't write the didn't have intimate knowledge of what the tools they're using aren't actually fully aware of its capabilities and where it can be used. So these are some. This is basically the trade-off between writing your own or using someone else's. But generally, I'd advise to go out and see what's out there. Although it is hard because there's not real one place you can look. I generally Google can only do so much.
Mm-hmm. But when someone who's learning about what they should do, trying to make a decision about how to move forward. Like if I'm evaluating a framework, and this is one of the things I'm trying to accomplish with the framework series. I'm not sure if I'm doing it yet though, is that I want to go and I want to build my, you know, whatever, my banking application. And I don't know if the Microsoft stuff's going to work for me, but at the same time, there might be a dozen open source frameworks out there. I could write something myself. I could use ServiceStack. I could use something else. I could use a combination of all of them. Is it just trial and error? Are benchmarks enough? I mean, you had to have sat down and done some analysis and really made a strong case for yourself to go and write a lot of this code that you've written. You couldn't have just done it because you wanted it to be your code.
Absolutely. No, I spent 2 years at the BBC as a technical architect, and I actually had to work on some really heavy SOA-like systems. And we did use we were a heavy usage of WCF, and there was actually the first SOA platform promoted by Microsoft was called CSF. Mm-hmm. It was actually an unmitigated disaster. It was actually quite huge. It was the wrong tool for the job, way over complex. And basically, most of the teams, it was like a 10, 12-man team for like 6 years just fighting the framework. And we're all following like proper design principles. We're all into enterprise integration patterns, very, very solid, very pro developer teams. And we were basically constantly fighting the framework. So having got all this experience about how to build web services, what the correct API should be, what the correct patterns are, and I believe the best patterns on how to build web services are actually from Martin Fowler camp. He's actually wrote some really nice they're simple patterns that promote reusable services, and I feel like that they're the ones we probably should be imitating. And so I didn't actually find that with the WCF. We spent too much time finding the framework. So it's very rigid. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, it goes against what the core essence of a service should be, which is interoperable and, accessible by many clients, not just clients that are, have it, yeah, not just SOAP clients, for instance, that you get to participate in those sessions. I had a good idea what the framework should be, and looking around, there was nothing at that time. This was like over about 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. So when I first started, ServiceStack, and it's been like great ever since. Like I've had major productivity wins just following some really simple designs and really simple things. I don't like there's no code gen, there's no build steps. It's just everything's based on clean models. The frame instead of inventing an artificial API. I actually have the framework bind to your model, so it basically empowers your model. So it's like the API is invisible. It's much easier to work with, much more productive, much mm-hmm. more testable, and basically it's just a massive win for myself and all the products and all the systems I've put it to work in over the years. So it's basically a matter of experience, being hurt. Mm-hmm. What we call that first implementer's pain. Having worked with a lot of external technologies, I was an ex-Java developer for many years. Got to use a lot of message queues and other enterprise integration patterns that basically, in many cases, are usually a better fit than web services as well. So I got a lot of exposure to a lot of technology. I kind of formed in my opinion what the best way it is to develop a kind of SOA-like systems, mm-hmm. and basically built a framework that promotes that idea. So, yeah.
So forgive me to kind of harp on this point, but I want to kind of make sure I understand that the kinds of thinking and the kinds of tools that someone who is trying to decide what framework to use or if is trying to write their own framework should use to make a decision. You're saying that you looked at Fowler and you looked at some patterns that were appropriate mm-hmm. for deciding, as well as it sounds like suffering if I may use that term, yep. with existing frameworks that just simply weren't cutting it. Because I'm trying to understand, should someone immediately assume that an existing framework is not going to work for them? Or should they go and do the work, abstract away the pieces that aren't working, and swap in entire subsystems? And at what level? Because at the beginning of the talk, we started looking at, you've got a text manipulation and serialization library, and that is separate and downloadable from the caching one, which is separate and downloadable from these other ones. Do you create your systems in that way, where you say, you know, I have a hunch that serialization is going to be an issue, so I'm going to make sure that is all done and factored out such that I can swap in and out trivially any number of libraries and then, you know, fail fast?
Yep. So, yeah. So I think in every time you make a massive technology choice, you should prototype you should pick a handful of frameworks that you're evaluating and definitely prototype solutions with it. I think that's the best way to actually work out if it's going to be the best fit for you. In terms of how ServiceStack has evolved, I basically originally used the .NET data contract JSON serializer, mm-hmm. but once I did the benchmark, because this is when I was working at Enflow, where we actually try to chase down every wasted millisecond, for instance, and so for instance, these were actually problems with the existing tools. So for the JSON serializer, mm-hmm. We wanted to get instant response times. We were benchmarked what the serializers were. We were actually quite sad to learn that JSON was actually a lot slower than, or was slower than XML, and we knew that was just not meant to be, and so we basically created a JSON serializer for that, because we knew that there was a lot of wasted CPU cycles there. And for the caching, because caching should be a first class concept, especially in high performance systems. And at the moment, the mandate to use XML config is and it's kind of crippling in that you can't integrate it inside your we call domain driven services as a first class concept, because it becomes it's not as testable, and basically we just wanted a clean implementation where we could swap out Memcache and Redis or a file dispatch solution and creating our own API, which is a clean unimpeded interface, was the best solution for us, and with just adapters to existing frameworks. Mm-hmm. We were originally using Memcache, but then Redis came in the scene, and Redis is just like Memcache on steroids. It's kind of like a really elegant NoSQL data store solution. It's distributed. It's perfectly written in terms of for maximum efficiency. It's a single process, like Node.js. It runs in a single event loop, and it basically hosts comp-side data structures. And I find that is extremely elegant, because you get to use the data structures you're familiar with in your program, but in a distributed way. So it was a really elegant solution because you can actually leverage to do a lot of things, like a lot of live lists that we're using at our startup we were taking advantage of Redis's data structures. And because at the time there was no .NET clients for it, well, we took the hit of, well, because it's kind of simple. McGill had one, but it was very thin wrapper around it, and I decided to make one more of an ORM, so we can. The C# Redis client that's in ServiceStack is in ships with three clients. It has a byte only client, which is a very 1-to-1 mapping with the Redis layer, and then it has a string for UTF-8 strings, and then a typed POCO client. So it becomes very easy to deal with generic types as clean POCO. So once you're at that level, you actually can do a lot of functionality with little code, because you're dealing with complex types, and we hide all the serialization abstractions away for you. So yeah, that was the reason why we originally did it. But the first cut of ServiceStack was using the existing Microsoft JSON data contract serializer. It was using Memcache, using with the ASP.NET caching provider, and it was using ASP.NET sessions. But over time, we've basically abstracted that out, mm-hmm. and got to what we have today. Yeah.
So it sounds like you started saying, I want to make some clean JSON services on top of my existing domain model.
Yeah.
And things kind of got more and more complicated, and your requirements for performance were greater and greater. And then you started factoring things out, and ServiceStack grew up out of that. Serialization became a problem, caching became a problem, etc.
Yeah, in terms of we were chasing down every inefficiency, basically. So we looked at the end result, and I feel like this is like the Google approach as well, where they actually look at the end result and find out what's the quickest way to get there and what's the most efficient delivery, what's the most deployment. So if you look at their how they deploy their single page applications, Gmail and Google Maps and that like, it's actually very their development story, where they invented the Speedy protocol, they invented the protocol buffers just because they're the best performance solutions to get to the end result. Mm-hmm. And so we were basically following that path, where it's, okay, what's the fastest way to deliver this like these services? And we're like, okay, we need to cache it. Okay, we need caching it. And we would rather, what's the most efficient use of caching? And it's like, we cache on validity instead of like based on time, because time is you don't get the best result. You can get stale caches back. Mm-hmm. And this is why we wanted to make caching a first-class concept, because in our domain model, Redis actually served as a database shield, where we were getting 90% cache hits. And upwards of that, and so every time we kind of saved the domain model, we would invalidate the cache, and we'd know exactly what caches we needed to invalidate. So basically, all we were having is we're serving our data set straight from Redis. Mm-hmm. So in the end, we basically looked at what our requirements were and worked backwards as like, okay, well, now we're going to have a gzip layer, we're going to have or a deflate stream. It's going to be cached, and the actual, well, so it's what service stack caches is a one line,
right?
And it would actually cache the deflated version, if your browser supports it, of the JSON payload or whatever endpoint you're hitting. You actually get that the final output cached into the Redis or whatever your caching provider is, and that gets written directly to the response stream. So this is like closest probably the fastest way you can serve a web service response in .NET in managed code, and that's kind of where we got to. So we worked our way backwards, worked out where the inefficiencies were, and basically coded them in.
So are you using the protocol buffers technique for communication, you know, in between tiers within your own stuff, and then you use JSON serialization when you kind of exit the service layer?
No, we use Redis. When we talk to Redis, we're talking to we basically use the JSV serial. I've invented my own format, which is slightly quicker and more compact than JSON, because it uses CSV style escaping, which is actually a bit more performant than JSON encoding. And we use that for .NET to .NET services because it's actually a lot more malleable. I believe we're about maybe at twice as slow as protocol buffers, maybe a bit more. But what you gain in versionability and resilience of your services and being able to actually debug it and version it over time is something was a trade-off we made. In .NET to .NET services, we basically use the JSV, which is the quickest text serializer.
So I'm confused then. When is the protocol buffers used?
Oh, we don't actually use it.
Oh, you don't use it. So you support them?
No, Stack Overflow supports it. As a benchmark, protocol buffers was in the benchmark, but it's not in Service Stack. It's like an anchor to say what the fastest serializer is.
I see. So yeah. Protocol buffers is known to be the fastest way to serialize something because because it's just so very light.
Very light, very efficient, and Mark has a really great implementation of it. And Google invented the wire format, and it does some really neat tricks to get it really, really, really small and really fast.
Ah, interesting. Okay. Mm. So what do you think about Service Stack as it relates to the WCF Web API stuff that's coming out, and how should people, when people are considering making their own services, where should they look at where your things fit and where the new stuff fits?
Okay, so the Web API, they've got this heavy REST focus. It's a massive step over WCF and hopefully WCF SOAP services weed itself out. I probably have different concerns because they might want to take every use case where I would like to provide an API that's kind of expressive. So, for instance, I will have an API to return a dictionary of strings, and that will be a HTTP header. So I won't have strong – I'll have some strong type constants to indicate the HTTP header name, but I'll leave a very thin open API that you can actually return – create any custom HTTP headers you want. I'm more concerned about being really productive, and in terms of you create models, and every other model will the entire framework will actually bind to your models. So it's kind of like empowering your models. It's completely code first driven, and it's very fast as a key requirement. And it's all solid design principles straight through. All your your service interfaces only need to implement a single interface. That interface lives in an interface. Implementation-free assembly, so I try to keep things highly testable. But basically, I try to be as productive as possible. I'm more interested in the Fowler patterns in how to design remote services, which is using coarse-grained bashful interfaces, DTOs, strong-tied generic clients, and basically empowering that model, make it really productive. And I got neat features like your HTML view will if you call your web services through the HTML browser, mm-hmm. you'll get an automatically you'll get a human readable view of your web service data. So if you return a list of POCOs, you'll get this sortable HTML table view, and makes it much easier to visualize your services. And I do that because that's part of the development cycle. So I just try to be as iteratively productive as possible, and with a performance focus. So I feel like there is a different focus, but it's WCF8 web APIs is much better than the previous things as it was before. I haven't actually done many benchmarks with it yet, but there is someone who's porting the ServiceStack example projects, and that's probably a good place to look for the differences between the two. I should give a link to it later, but someone's actually porting the all the ServiceStack example projects across, just that, so actually give a good comparison between the two. So maybe it's that would be probably the best way for people to identify between the two.
Yeah, definitely. If you've got a series of links that you can give us, we'll put them all in the show links and people can check it out. And they can go up to servicestack.net and they can also click on showcases and see examples of websites that are using ServiceStack. And there's lots and lots of good stuff up on the site, including benchmarks. They can download the code up there, or they can get it from NuGet. And you've got packages that will get them started in MVC or ASP.NET right away.
Yep, that's right. Yep. Probably the NuGet might be the quickest way to get started, because it's and NuGet's done a really good thing, I think, for open source in general. It kind of gives us a little bit of a gateway into VS.NET, which a lot of .NET projects were suffering because of the disconnect.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And then hopefully in the future sometime people will be able to go file new ServiceStack project, or maybe add ServiceStack to an existing project in a really, really friendly kind of, so easy, it's as easy as falling off a log kind of a way.
Yeah, yeah. I think there is a danger that I do think some sort of template is okay, but being code first, I do prefer that model, and I will try not to cater too much for the designer-driven kind of stuff, because it is, like, if you use ReSharper, it's just infinitely quicker to write a class, refactor into a new file, and then create a service off that, and it's just, like, takes seconds to build a service and deploy it and run it. Mm-hmm. And I just find that... I'm not too concerned about making it palatable for new developers. I'm more concerned about making it a really great productive option for existing developers, so not trying to be too impeded by GUI design constraints, for instance.
Very cool. Well, thanks a lot for talking to me. I appreciate it.
Cheers. Thanks, Scott. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Everyone can check that out at servicestack.net. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. We'll see you again next week.